Water is a basic human need. It is required for drinking to support sanitation and hygiene, sustain life and health. The access to both water and sanitation are human rights. But while that is true, unlike air and sunlight, water is not free. It comes with a big price tag and someone's gotta pay for it. Taps, toilets, and soaps, they're human inventions, and the systems that carry potable water or waste away are costly and require constant maintenance. I'm Christy I, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we're gonna be diving into the overlooked value of water and the cost to those without it. Governments are under an obligation to provide water and sanitation to all at a fair price, depending on their ability to pay. But providing water and sanitation free of charge for everyone would deplete government resources and revenues needed to expand and upgrade these services that we need to drive rapid progress. So, to give the right value to water and its sanitation services, we need to take into account the benefits these services bring to people, such as improved living conditions and productivity, reduced health care costs, and involvement in the workplace. Worldwide, 844 million people lack access to drinking water, and 2.3 billion do not have access to latrines or other basic sanitation facilities. This causes an increased risk for the spread of infectious diseases, which can lead to a loss in human life and cause an economic burden on society. Contaminated water and poor sanitation are among the leading causes of deaths for children under 5 as they develop critical health issues. In the U.S., at least 2 million Americans don't have running water or a working toilet at home, a crisis which costs the U.S. economy $8.5 billion each year. These water issues disproportionately impact indigenous tribes, people of color, immigrants, low-income people, and those living in rural areas. Households without water and sanitation access spend, on average, $15,800 a year more than other households in health care costs, lost productivity at work, and other issues. Purchasing bottled drinking water costs a family an average of $1,350 a year. It is estimated that achieving universal access to safe drinking water and sanitation in 140 low to middle income countries would cost about $114 billion per year. And to secure clean water and sanitation for all people by 2030, the cost would exceed $1 trillion. So who's going to foot that bill? Well, today we're joined by Mohammed Mahmoud, Director of the Climate and Water Program. Now, Mohammed, can you provide an overview of the current global situation regarding access to clean water in developing nations and the current challenges people face in accessing clean water?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's crazy to think today we still, in a global sense, access to clean water and sanitation services is still very much an issue for large segments of the developing world and rural communities and areas that have issues in finding water resources or being able to transport water to where it is needed, it's still very much an issue. And we see that today. Water is problematic in a number of ways in terms of the challenges it poses, even in developed nations, in terms of securing adequate water resources. But the fundamental aspect of being able to find safe, clean drinking water, the most basic of human services when it comes to water supply, is still an issue in developing nations.
And how critical is the issue of water scarcity and lack of access to clean water in these regions? And how has the lack of access to clean water affected your community?
I mean, water is a cross-cutting issue regardless of the economic status of different countries, of different communities, of different cities. Like I said, at the most basic level, in areas where communities or countries are hard hit in terms of economic sustainability, communities that don't have basic water infrastructure that's able to deliver water from various sources, whether it's groundwater or surface water systems, that infrastructure is non-existent. And that's when you have the issue of clean water not being available for those communities at a most basic level. But water scarcity also affects developed nations or countries that even have robust water infrastructure systems or plentiful sources of water supply or a diverse water supply portfolio. And part of that is because of the impact of climate change affecting even those systems and areas where countries already have a robust water supply to date. And so water scarcity doesn't only affect developing nations, but also affects developed nations in terms of supply available, and then also transporting water from where it is to where it's needed. Climate change is increasing warming, so that increases the rate of evaporation in surface water systems, in places where water is stored in dams and reservoirs. And then also it inflates water demand. How much water is traditionally being used also increases because of the effect of warming from climate change. And so water scarcity is multidimensional in that regard.
How has technology improved access to clean water, and how expensive are water purification plants to build?
Technology has helped in certain regards, but one thing we also need to consider is developing nations or communities that might not have the financial resources to implement large-scale water infrastructure projects may not be able to readily mainstream or incorporate technologies that may be resource-intensive, either in terms of energy or in terms of cost. So I'll give you an example. In places where water is generally scarce, and the Middle East is a good example of this, and coastal parts of the Middle East, countries have shifted to desalination. Absent sufficient groundwater supplies, absent surface water systems and rivers. But desalination comes at a cost, not just construction costs and how long it takes to build these types of plants, but they require a lot of energy to be able to desalt seawater into drinking water. And so that energy also comes at a cost. So there's technologies that can help address part of the water scarcity and clean water issue. But implementation also depends on country to country and community to community. And you'll see that there are now efforts or developments on more grassroots, local level, community level technological improvements that are low tech, but could have a high impact for rural and local communities that maybe large scale advancements in technology or water projects may not be as feasible.
Thank you so much, Mohammed, but please stick around. Mohammed will stay with us right here after the break. And when we come back, we will take a look at countries with the worst sanitation facilities and why. Investing in water and sanitation systems so that everyone has safe, reliable, affordable service is the definition of a no-brainer. A recent study showed that access to toilets with safely managed sanitation could yield up to $86 billion per year in greater productivity and reduced health costs. Sanitation is also the first line of defense in protection against infectious diseases such as COVID. And access to clean water can greatly improve health outcomes in many cases with little need for additional expensive infrastructure. But while governments have made some improvements over the past decades, it has not kept up with the population growth in the developing world. Asia has the worst sanitation, with 1.77 billion people short of adequate facilities, and only 35% of wastewater is treated. Globally, 80% of wastewater is released to the environment without any treatment, and this is the biggest source of water pollution. This polluted water is linked to many diseases, including cholera, hepatitis A, typhoid, and polio. Meanwhile, Africa performed the worst in terms of drinking water. It is estimated that 300 million people on the continent, which is more than a third of the population, have no fixed supply. And although Venezuela ranks as one of the world's top 15 countries in renewable freshwater resources, the ongoing economic crisis has severely disrupted continuous access to clean water and basic sanitation for nearly 8 out of every 10 Venezuelans. Even with the government price controls, a bottle of water costs around $3. But the minimum wage at $8 per month, clean drinking water is out of reach for many. Water insecurity also leads to a number of other insecurities. If you don't have enough water to grow food, you will also end up with food insecurity. Around 70% of fresh water globally goes towards agriculture, and about a third of the world's cities already compete with agriculture for water. Competition will only increase as the urban demand for water is predicted to grow by 80% within the next 3 decades. Now, there are a handful of countries that have access of 100% access to safe drinking water. This includes Greece, Iceland, Kuwait, Liechtenstein, Malta, Monaco, New Zealand, San Marino, and Singapore. And on the opposite end of the spectrum, countries where less than 20% of the population have access to safe drinking water include Chad, the Central African Republic, Sierra Leone, Rwanda, and Ethiopia. So for this and more, let's bring in again Mohamed Mahmoud, Director of the Climate and Water Program. Mohamed, what are some of the main challenges in implementing water infrastructure in developing nations?
I think there's several challenges. Probably the easiest one to draw on first is financial capacity to fund those types of projects. It's always been a call for many, many years, and certainly in the climate change context of developed nations being able to support developing nations to be more sustainable. In the climate context, for example, we talk about how developed nations that have achieved sort of industrial efficiency through decades have contributed the most to emissions in the atmosphere that have accelerated climate change and thus have impacted developing nations or climate vulnerable nations disproportionately. I think there's a similar track you can look at when you talk about water security for developing nations. In the climate change track, warming is impacting water supplies, we had mentioned earlier, but similarly, if you look at developing nations that have historically suffered under the yoke of colonialism, where countries have come in, sort of extracted resources to their benefits, European colonial powers and so forth, that has had an effect that has propagated through decades to the current time. And so those countries not having the sufficient financial resources available today, right, there's a link with that to what's happened in terms of colonialism in the past, but that should be a call to action for developed countries to be able to help support developing countries in garnering the financing needed to support large-scale water infrastructure projects. Another issue with application of large-scale infrastructure, water infrastructure projects in developing nations is operation. So you could build it if you have the sufficient resources, maybe you can continue to maintain it, but there becomes an issue of operation and making sure that maintenance does continue onwards in time. The reason I bring this up is I use the example of what happened in Libya probably a couple of months ago at this point, where the dam collapsed in Derna following the huge storm Daniel that dumped a huge amount of rain on that coastal city of Derna in Libya. The storm by itself was damaging, but not to the point of what ultimately happened. The devastation, the mass devastation, really occurred because of the failure of those dams. And part of that is because of insufficient resources to continue to maintain those dams and operate them efficiently. And so some aspects of dam operations were left to huge disrepair, which ultimately led to the failure of those two upstream dams, and then added that enormous surge of water that led to the really serious devastation that occurred in Libya. So financial resources aren't just necessary to construct these projects, but to continue to maintain them. And then on top of that, resources in terms of scaling up the skill of citizens and the technical expertise within those developing nations to operate those systems. So it's an ongoing issue in terms of being able to have those water infrastructure projects continue to be sustainable and operational in those developing countries.
Are there innovative solutions or programs that have shown promise in addressing these issues?
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about local community level solutions, and you see this a lot, startups or small groups that have developed low-tech ways of extracting safe water from unclean drinking water sources, whether it be groundwater or surface, you know, lakes or streams that otherwise would be contaminated and require treatment before being consumed. But then there's also other technologies and efforts that look to address the water scarcity problem before we even get to the clean drinking water issue in terms of available supply. Some are could be considered a little bit fringe. They appear to be, but have been in operation for a while. So I'll give you an example of what looks like science fiction, but has actually been in place is folks have heard of weather modification or cloud seeding. The idea of enhancing storms to produce more rain. And those are programs that have been in effect in all parts of the world. Certainly some countries have more robust programs. I know the Western US has a pretty robust cloud seeding program in different states. The UAE and Saudi Arabia have embarked on this fully. Parts of North Africa have done this off and on in the past. But the issue, I think, when it comes to address the water scarcity problem is there's not a magic bullet. The approach is to use a diverse set of tools to be able to address the water scarcity issue and then, of course, subsequently access to clean water supply. Other ideas, and this is probably more in the urban setting, maybe not so applicable in all developing nations, but maybe in the urban areas or cities of developing nations where you'll see most of the population reside, is this idea of enhanced water recycling or urban water reuse, where you would take wastewater that is essentially discharged from water consumption in homes and residential areas and for sanitation purposes, and clean it to the extent to at least be able to reuse that for non-drinking water uses for farming and irrigation and agriculture. And this will be more costly, of course, treated to drinking water standard. And that exists in several cities and countries that have implemented such an approach. It's the issue of it is more of an optics, you know, putting aside the cost aspect. People negatively refer to it as toilet to tap, which is very reductive. It's actually more complex than that because we have systems that treat water from non-potable to drinking, and we have systems that already treat water from wastewater to potable. So it's just a matter of connecting those, closing the loop or the circuit on both of those. But there's absolutely innovative ideas on how to diversify available water supply to address this issue.
To what extent is global cooperation essential in addressing the water crisis in developing nations?
It's essential. Partly because of the cost issue we talked about. And there are efforts, certainly in terms of outreach and implementation of improving access to safe and clean drinking water from the developed world. You see a lot of NGOs and you see a lot of on-the-ground organizations, whether they're individual organizations or groups or under the umbrella of larger organizations like the United Nations, to be able to build local community projects for local communities that in developing countries that are most hard hit in terms of their ability to acquire safe drinking water to make that happen. You see a lot of philanthropic organizations that support the construction of groundwater wells in rural and remote areas for communities that otherwise would not have a readily available supply of water. So international collaboration helps to facilitate some of that, not just at a high level between country to country where governments want to address their internal issues of available water supply for all of their citizens, both in urban areas and in rural areas as well, but I think also from to community level with external organizations that help to build low-tech, simple potential solutions to at least ease some of the burden of those communities to be able to access clean and safe drinking water.
And can you share some examples of countries or communities that have successfully improved access to clean water and what lessons can be learned from them?
I mean, it's a mixed bag. You can address part of the problem, but other aspects of the problem remain. And it becomes more of a governance issue. So, and what ends up happening, unfortunately, is certainly if we look at water resource systems that are shared, use the example of either the Nile River Basin, sticking to the Middle East again, or even the Tigris-Euphrates system. With the advent of climate change, with expanded warming, less water being reduced at the headwaters of these rivers, meaning at the higher elevation part where water is generated either through accumulation of snow and then snow melt or just runoff from the mountains. The traditional approach is to build reservoirs and dams, and historically that's been the case. And you've seen that in those river systems as well. But what ends up happening is, unfortunately, becomes a zero-sum game where countries that are at the higher end of the system will tend to store more, nowadays, will tend to store more water in their reservoirs to kind of protect themselves or boost their available water supply to meet their various water needs at various levels, to the detriment of those downstream. So there are situations where upstream nations have, through the use of reservoirs and dams, protected their ability to access water supply. But at the very downstream end, and in the case of the Tigris-Euphrates, you see this with Iraq, which is suffering extreme aridification, partly brought on because of the reduction of water supply in those rivers. Yes, there are cases where countries, certainly if it's a shared water system, gain a benefit through various methods of water storage, certainly surface water storage, but then that has a negative implication to other countries downstream.
Are there specific initiatives or policies that have proven to be particularly effective in addressing these issues?
Yeah, I think the one way to really move forward in this, and it's very challenging now because of water scarcity and drought brought on by intense level of warming we've been experiencing on average the last few years because of climate change. I mean, this year itself, if you've been anywhere in the Northern Hemisphere this summer, Northern Hemisphere summer, you've experienced some level of extreme heat that's been extraordinarily high compared to what you may have experienced in the past. And that has led us to be on track, almost certainty that this year is going to be the warmest year on record. But what that means is that we have to be more creative in terms of how we manage existing water supplies. And one of the successes or ways to do that, to answer your question more directly, is looking at various ways to shore up for the same water that we receive, or different countries or communities or nations receive, increase that water footprint. And we've talked about looking at water augmentation ideas such as cloud seeding to increase precipitation or rain. We briefly talked about desalination as bringing in seawater and treating it. Yes, there's costs associated with that. But then the flip side is also to look at water conservation. Can we be more efficient in our water use? And there's certainly success stories there where, and also room for improvement in different countries where how we use our water can be more efficient, how we use our water residentially in terms of urban water use and demand. And this may be more applicable for developed nations than developing nations. Also, how we use our water for agriculture. Growing food is the most water consumptive or water intensive use. Most of the water use, I think about 60-70% on average worldwide, goes towards growing food for irrigation and food production and agriculture. Can we make that more efficient? And absolutely we can. There's certainly ways to do that. Shifting to drip irrigation or even sprinkler irrigation instead of flood irrigation. It's crazy to think, but there's a lot of parts of the world that still use flood irrigation as a way to water their crops. Savings there could be huge in terms of taking that water that's saved and putting it to other uses or retaining it for future use and sort of extending the viability of our water supply. There's also huge losses that occur in transmitting water. Another interesting or unfortunate statistic you may have heard is up to 40 to 50% of water transmitted to urban areas in Jordan, for example, is lost due to water inefficiency or illegal sort of diversions from the network. That's an extraordinarily huge amount of water that could be utilized for other resources. So, but there are efforts that look at how do we be more efficient in water use? How do we augment our water supply? And then how do we operate our water systems, our reservoirs and water infrastructure more efficiently to minimize losses and to be more responsive to the needs of our communities and our, on our different consumptive water uses. So there certainly there's a lot of examples. I feel like I don't know even which one to pick for you more specifically over the other, but they do exist.
Thank you so much, Mohammed, for all your time today. So while access to clean, safe drinking water should be a basic human right, as it is literally life-saving, it comes at a cost. Water pipe infrastructure must first be built for access, and then the water needs to undergo treatments such as sedimentation, filtration, and disinfection in order to be safe for consumption. Whether they be subsidized by wealthier neighborhoods or by the government, it is infrastructure that is critically necessary in many parts of the world today. I'm Christy Ai. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you right back here next time on The Cost of Everything.